It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Good evening and welcome back to another live episode of Red Tinted Glasses. And well, the script had to be ripped up and started all over again because the news that we've been waiting for, Barry Robson has been sacked as Aberdeen manager after a turbulent start to 2024, I think is politely a way of saying it. Tonight, I've been joined by Phil Mayer and Jonathan Main. So we've got lots of opinion and lots of you joining in the live tonight on our YouTube channel with comments. So we'll get to as many as we can. Johnny, I'll start with you first of all. I don't think the news today came as any real surprise. Probably the only surprise was that they actually carried out the decision today.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised. It was a long time coming, but I'm a bit relieved that it's over now. I don't feel any pleasure or any happiness about it. I feel quite sad about it, actually, that it didn't work out. But just a pure sense of relief for me this morning when I read it. And now I'm thinking about it a bit more. Yeah, a bit of sadness.
Yeah, I think it's never nice to see somebody lose their job. And I think, you know, as Phil, you said on the last show, in Barry Robson's shoes, he was never going to turn down the position when offered. I don't think any of us would turn down that opportunity. We wanted it to work out for him. And it's just unfortunate that he kind of has gone against what worked for him so well last season. What was your reaction to the news?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was probably slightly different to Johnny in the sense of obviously I was happy in a way. I think it was just purely because it does feel like it's been a long time coming just with how things have been going. Obviously, we all wanted him to do well, you know, and I don't think anyone can have any ill will towards him as a person for, you know, what he did for the club last season. So yeah, it's hopefully onwards and upwards from here. And we've got to get the next one right.
Yeah, and I think you're right there, Phil, to mention what he did last season, of course, in terms of the turnaround, obviously getting us into the European group stages as a result of finishing third. It was quite interesting hearing some people saying that we should be thankful for Barry for taking us to the group stages. Of course, you know, just finishing third was achieving group stages in itself. But Johnny, Phil mentions there about, you know, the pressure to get the next one right. And I really feel that the pressure is on Dave Cormack and the rest of the board to get this right. And I just hope that they do take the due diligence and the full and thorough process that they've alleged to take in previous hirings of managers. Do you think between now and the next appointment, because if you read the statement from the club, Peter Leaven and Scott Anderson are taking interim charge of training. There was no mention of the game at the weekend against Celtic and following game against Rangers. Are maybe people reading too much into that? Do you expect Peter Leaven to be in charge come 12:30 on Saturday against Celtic?
Probably not, no. I think when they put the same, I mean, we're here again at this time of the year. I think this time last year we were saying they need to get this right. You know, that's two appointments. You know, this is the third one. We didn't want to be coming back to the same rinse and repeat again, but we are, and it was necessary. But I think the last time they put out a statement to Sat Goodwin, it was basically, Barry's going to have the team for the weekend and what have you. This is very pointedly not said that. So I think they may have a backup option or a short-term option lined up and ready to go. And it may transpire that doesn't come through, and it may just end up with Peter Lieben taking the team on Saturday, which probably gives me the fear, to be honest.
And of course, the name that was being bandied about this afternoon as a potential interim, now I know both of you have differing opinions, but I'll come to you first, Phil, was Neil Warnock, most recently in charge of Huddersfield Town in the English Championship, has long touted himself to want a job in Scotland and has previously applied for the Aberdeen job, if rumours are to be believed. Similarly, I think when the Hibs job was being advertised and Nick Montgomery got it, he was interested then. Phil, I mean, it would be box office. I would be up for entertainment purposes more than anything. Would you welcome Neil Warnock on an interim basis? And would you be happy to see the club go down that kind of interim, maybe 6 month appointment till the end of the season?
Well, do you know what? If you'd asked me earlier on, I would have said no. But the more I've sat in it, the more I'm kind of same for you. I think it's mainly box office. I had to refrain from doing the Neil Warnock up to the camera there. No, honestly, I don't think it would be that bad of a shout. When you look at the managers that are freely available just now, the position that we're in to try and attract managers out of their current position, it's not a bad shout to get somebody of Warnock's calibre in. And I think some of the players in that park could do with a bit of a Neil Warnock boot up the arse, really. So I don't think he would be a bad shout. I wouldn't like to get it on a permanent basis. I mean, what is he now, 75?
Five
now?
I think someone said, yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of going back to that archaic view of things. But for the position we're in, I don't think he'd be a bad shout. And like you say, he would be hilarious in Scottish football. Could you imagine him down at Ibrox and they get a dodgy penalty, doing the whole, we're in London, boys, we're in London, get nothing out here.
Johnny, I saw your views on social media. You kind of have the opposite opinion of, well, certainly Neil Warnock coming in, but in terms of this interim appointment, maybe seeing us through till the end of the season to allow time to get a more permanent solution, is that something you're in favour of? Because certainly my off-screen contributor, my colleague Neve, says, I just hope the club don't get hypnotised by an interim and a run of good games that lead us to appointing someone on a more permanent basis, I guess, a la Barry Robson.
No, I think I want someone to come in as soon as possible. Warnock, okay, to what we're saying about box office, yes, it would box office, but it would turn Pittodrie into a circus, I think, and we've still got, it's not as if we've completely given up on finishing fourth at this stage of the season. So we have to do that, I think, as a minimum to get back in with a shout of European, or into Europe next year, and with a shout of qualifying for the groups. So I think while we do have that, and yes, he ticks the experience manager box, and yeah, he's not a permanent solution. He could be a stick and plaster. But I think, I mean, I was speaking to a friend of mine, or a colleague and friend of mine, who is a QPR fan, and he said they wanted him back at QPR after Beale left to go to Rangers. So it's a bit of a, he did say he'll play players in the positions they're supposed to play in, which is, I think, something that we have been guilty of not doing in the last three seasons. But yeah, I don't know. I think it would just be a bit of a circus, and it's not really for me. I think we should have already put feelers out to permanent replacements, and that would be, I think, a failing on the part of the board if they haven't. I don't want to see someone come in. Because, like you say, it could, the Barry Robson thing can happen again. And, you know, if we did get fourth from this lowly position, you know, what do we do? I mean, yeah, it's not for me.
Ananis can't be bothered says, if Warnock says no, are we then going to try for Big Sam next? And one of my friends mentioned that as well. Are we just going to go through some of the archaic English managers that have, you know, bounced around the leagues down there? And as you say, Johnny, would tick the experienced mould. Interestingly, you know, director of football has been mentioned. Phil, where does the kind of buck stop? Do we see any more changes on the board? Are the likes of Stephen Gunn under pressure now as a result of Barry Robson's departure? You know, I saw a few people mentioning Willie Garner's position as well. You know, we've kind of had this discussion on the last episode. You mentioned a lot of yes men being in position. Do you think they'll retain their positions, or should Cormac be looking at the wider footballing structure of the club just now?
I think they will retain their positions purely. Like I said last time, it's yes men. I feel like Cormac kind of likes to be surrounded by that. But at the same time, if there was going to be change, I feel like it'd be sort of in the off season. You know, losing a manager loses all your continuity anyway. Changing the board loses that even more. So I feel like they'll stay in place now. I don't think they should stay in their place. Like I said last week, I think, you know, Market and Degree and Willie Garner should, you know, I don't know why they're on a football monitoring board in the first place. You know, it looks like we were getting some positive change with Burrows coming in and some of the things he was wanting to do. And then it seems like we just seem to take steps back with how they seem to handle things. So I would like to think the buck goes a bit higher than just Robson.
I can't remember as well. Obviously, Peter Leaven is, you know, taking charge of training. Has Craig Sampson survived yet another managerial call as well?
Yeah, I think he has.
There was no mention of him. Every mention was just Robson and Agnew. So,
Max Lovechild. I don't know. What's
that, isn't it? He's doing something right. Dunn commented saying he holds Cormac fully responsible. Get it right, fourth time of asking for fuck's sake. Then step back, let him do what he hopefully has past experience of doing. I guess this is going to be on the forefront of a lot of Aberdeen fans' minds right now, is putting that trust and faith in Cormac to get the managerial appointment right. For me, my concern is doing that in the right amount of time. Johnny, do you trust that the club will take the right length of time? You've mentioned about getting somebody in sooner rather than later, but we don't want to rush this and get it wrong and, as you say, be here again this time in 2025.
No, absolutely not. But and I will also reply to Daniel's comment. No, I don't think our director of football has a plan, but he should do. That is his job. Mm-hmm. And I do think he should probably not be in that job as well at this stage. So I don't think this is not a Barry Robson problem. This is clearly, this goes a lot higher than Barry. It goes higher than Jim Goodwin. It goes higher than Stephen Glass. It goes to the people who hired him in the first place. And if you believe the structure, then the football, the first team manager answers to the director of football. I think it was telling. I didn't read too much of the statement today because I couldn't bring myself to read more nonsense from the club. Mm. But I did notice it was Dave Cormack who was quoted and not Alan Burrows. Now, that strikes me as a bit strange, given that Burrows is the CEO. He should be in charge of the daily running of the club. He should be the one. He agrees, of course he does. He has to listen to me screaming at the television twice a week for the last 6 months. What was I saying? Yeah, it's odd that Burrow's name wasn't anywhere on that statement. I don't know if he's been neutered a bit in his role. It's not had the influence he was hoping he would have. There needs to be a root and branch restructuring of the club to try. I mean, I have no confidence that we'll get it right because, let's face it, the track record's abysmal, right?
Yeah.
And take the wider view, the managers we've had, Glass, a novice, right? Probably happy to get the job, delighted he was given the chance. Goodwin hadn't managed at our level not being disrespectful to St Mirren, but it was a step up for him. He was happy to take the job. I think we felt at the time he said the right things to get the job in the first place. And now Robson was an interim, graduated to full-time based on performances. I don't know if a serious, credible manager will come into Aberdeen, look at the structure, look at the way the club appears to be run, and say, I want some of that. So that's a concern I would have.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair concern. And, you know, you do get managers that don't want to work under a director of football, let alone maybe someone with the experience of Stephen Gunn in that role. Jeff Moran points to the lack of communication in the past month from Burrows. Cormack is extremely questionable in a modern business environment. Are we really surprised, though, that Cormack's paws are all over the statement from the club? Because any chance to be in the limelight, he's gonna grab. Now, kind of alluding to the point that Jonathan made, Phil, the musical box comments, as this wasn't an unexpected sacking, I would expect there have been discussions of possible replacements. Now, that is a whole lot of assumption put on the board based on what we saw last time out. But you would like to think, kind of, again, as we mentioned on the last show about the papering over the cracks with the win over Hearts, the win over Ross County, this has kind of been a sacking that has felt like the writing's been on the wall for a while. You would like to think that the board have learnt from their mistakes in terms of kind of probably being slow off the mark in terms of trying to look for a Jim Goodwin replacement. And we as fans can only hope that those lessons have been kind of heard and they've put a bit of a list into place over the last couple of weeks ahead of, you know, unfortunately things not working out for Barry.
No, absolutely. With the calamity of the Goodwin sacking, even the Glass sacking, surely they've got to know they've always got to have a contingency plan handy. All the top teams have a contingency plan handy for when something like this happens. So I would like to think that they had a pre-made list of targets that they were either already in the ear of, you know, weeks before this, or at least, you know, started putting the feelers out for.
Yeah.
But yeah, God knows, with our track record, it's probably going to be an absolute last dash at somebody.
And as Can't Be Bothered also makes a really valid point as well. Of course, we need to find a new head of recruitment as well, because our current head of recruitment is off to Leeds tomorrow. He was seeing out the January transfer window, allegedly, given the thousands of sightings we've seen. Exactly, Johnny, where they all come.
Gardeners.
So that's tomorrow. Now, before I move on to another point in kind of relation to signings, this comment just came in from Jamie, and I want to get both of your opinions on. So, Johnny, I'll come to you first. Jamie says, from the outside looking in, the Aberdeen job isn't an attractive job. Now, I don't know if Jamie's an Aberdeen fan or not, but I personally disagree. I was listening to this discussion on Sports Sound last night, and I know you'll have been listening as well. Rory Loy and Willie Miller were kind of having the argument about the Aberdeen job being an attractive job. And I think with the weight of expectation that comes with managing a club like Aberdeen, with where you can take a club like Aberdeen, what you can achieve with a club like Aberdeen, and that's winning trophies, taking us into Europe, hopefully past the group stage in Europe as well. Regardless of where we are just now in the mess that it feels like we're in, the Aberdeen job has to be seen as an attractive job, surely, from a certainly good amount of managers out there.
I agree. I think so. But I'm biased, so are you. So it's fair.
Yeah, true.
but trying to be objective about it, look at the squad. If you look at the... I know we maybe over-egg this, but the squad is capable of finishing third. Obviously, we've completely blown it this season. I think it's far too late now, but the squad's there, I think, for someone, for a good manager. I think it depends. For a rookie manager to bet his house on coming to Aberdeen and enhancing his reputation, we've seen the last three appointments haven't worked out for them. The pressure's too much. The weight of expectation is too much. I think I've said many times before, Aberdeen FC manager's job is not an apprenticeship.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a confident manager, if you're a confident, experienced manager with a track record and you know you've done it before, you look at that squad, I think you probably would fancy it. You know, it yeah. doesn't take much. We're not asking for, you know, European Cups and league championships. We're just asking for mediocrity, really, and the occasional cup.
Yeah, and as Willie Miller said last night on SportsZone, Jordy Dragon making the point, the expectations at Aberdeen are now to finish third. As much as, you know, Johnny, me and you'll probably argue we should be aiming higher than third when the season starts. Willie Miller got sacked for finishing second. You know, he had a lot more expectation during his spell. Now a couple of people kind of picking up on the comment, Paul Donaldson, regular contributor to these lives, picking up the fact that Tom English, I mean, I'll take his opinion on the Aberdeen job with a pinch of salt at this moment in time, saying that from the outside, the Aberdeen job seems less attractive due to the fact we keep sacking managers every season. Paul feels he can't disagree with that, whereas Ewan Grant thinks that the Aberdeen job is more attractive now than it was when McInnes took over. Now, on the point that Paul make or refers to that Tom English made about the sackings, again, this was debated on SportsZone last night, and I had to agree with the panel because it wasn't like we're sacking managers for sitting in fourth because they can't get us into third. That you could kind of see as an unattractive job. We're sitting in eighth just now, 19 points behind third place. Johnny, you say, you know, we're blowing or already blown third place. Last season, went on that horrendous run, Scottish Cup exit, nothing else to play for in that season. Obviously, thanks to Barry, we got ourselves back in the race for third and achieved that. We're not sacking the managers for, you know, just failing on the targets. We're sacking these managers for significantly underachieving. And both Goodwin and Robson received significant financial backing on top of that as well. So, you know, with that in mind as well, Phil, I still maintain that it is an attractive job. We just need to have an experienced manager and not on his apprentice, as Johnny would say.
Maybe somebody with bags and bags of experience. I mean, you look at the club, it's a club that on paper and in everything that it puts out, you know, to the media, to fans, etc., it's a club on the up. It's got lofty ambitions. It's got an owner who's willing to financially back you. It's a...
He was so engrossed, he's dropped out. It's the joys of doing a live podcast.
I was Davey Cormack cutting my Wi-Fi wires. Thank you. Yeah. Not appreciating me.
You can continue your point now, Phil.
Oh, I was getting too passionate, but no, it's a club that's on the up. That I think that if you're, you know, your career is only going to be projected upwards if you do well with Aberdeen. I mean, it's that double edged sword that if you do bad, it can be obviously really bad and detrimental. And like I said, I don't know how easy working with Cormack and Gunn would be outside of the financial backing, but you know, I think you're right. You either need to be a really experienced manager that's willing to put your reputation on the line a little bit, or, you know, someone really up and coming, you know, that's maybe worked their way up the leagues and really wants to keep that progression going.
And I guess another kind of point on the back of what you've just said there, Phil, is, Johnny, how do you view, you know, managers that may view Aberdeen as a stepping stone? Because again, I saw this debate on social media where people don't necessarily want a manager that views Aberdeen as a stepping stone to the English Championship, English, I was going to say Premiership. If folk are leaving us for the Premiership, they could be doing a very impressive job. But, you know, I mentioned John Eustace's name. I've seen Gary Rowett's name mentioned before. Guys that have done well in the English Championship, maybe looking to resurrect their career again. Other names such as Paul Heckenbottom as well. Doesn't appeal to me straight away. But, you know, maybe guys looking to get back into management and to propel their career again. Does appointing a manager who looks at Aberdeen as a stepping stone worry you at all?
No, because in reality, every manager in Scotland is looking at potentially getting a bigger gig down south. Mm-hmm. That's the case. I don't think Philippe Clément was coming into Rangers stay there for the rest of his career. If he does well at Rangers, he'll be moving on quick, smart. Yeah. That's the reality. Brendan Rodgers did it the first time around. Ange Postecoglou just did it this season. The reality is the Scottish League is, you know, a level or two below the top leagues. So any manager that does well, let's say wins a cup, does well in Europe, qualifies, you know, through the group stages and the knockouts and even the Conference League, is going to draw attention to himself. That's the reality, and we just have to live with it.
Yeah, and look, we're a club that fully advertise ourselves to be a club where we're going to bring in talent, develop them and sell on for a profit. If that's what we end up doing in terms of a managerial appointment, then so be it, because ultimately they would be achieving success with Aberdeen. But as we've said, we've got to temper that with a level of experience coming into the club, not just starting out from the very bottom as well. Phil, would you have any concerns around that sort of appointment using the club as a stepping stone?
No, not at all. I mean, much like Johnny said, I mean, I don't really know what people would expect. I mean, you get somebody that stays at Aberdeen for 10 years, you know, they're going to overstay their welcome. Results are going to get ground down. But sort of McInnes. I mean, you know, if McInnes maintained the level that he maintained when he first came in, fine, but that very rarely happens. I mean, you look at the managers that are the longest serving in the league, like Martindale, it just begins on a downward spiral.
Mm.
It's just a fact of life. If people get out whilst their stock's high and we get compensated for it, then I don't really see the issue.
Yeah. Craig Ledingham raising the point, the job may appear as a poison chalice to some. I just wonder how easy it will be to motivate the players. Now, you know, we've been speaking about the manager just now, and the players right now are avoiding any sort of flack. I was making the point today that I feel, unlike the end of Jim Goodwin's tenure, I don't feel there's kind of that level of disconnect between the group of players and the management. I just feel that Barry Robson was very limited in what he could do with the bunch of players in terms of his own tactical nous. He was trying to forge forward with a formation that didn't suit the current squad, as we've all known with the lack of wingers. But this point from Niamh McPherson says, hunger and desire go a long way towards turning this Aberdeen team around. Something Goodwin was good at talking about but failed to execute. Someone able to dilute this throughout is needed. Johnny, we've had managers that can talk the talk but have failed to walk the walk. Barry, maybe to a bit of an extent on that as well. How important is it to get a new manager in that can not only galvanise the support, given the general feeling of apathy that swept amongst the Red Army, but also galvanise this set of players? As you said, fourth is still achievable this season. You know, we've still got games in hand, but to galvanise those players, because they're not going to be able to bring anybody in between now and the end of the season.
No, we missed that chance by leaving it so long, but that's another story altogether. I don't think it. Do you know what? I think the nuts and bolts are there. I think the team. How many times did I hear you guys and Callum say, how many times is Leighton Clarkson going to watch the ball sailing over his head? I mean, we have players capable of playing a good style of football. It's just that we haven't been utilising them. Conor Barron hasn't got enough game time. Shinny's probably played a bit too much and looks a bit burnt out at this stage. He just didn't utilise the squad, and he was moaning about tiredness in the early part of the season, and we kind of gave him a pass. We did. We gave him a pass because we thought, after the winter break, it'll be fine. You know, everything will be, you know, this is when we'll go on a run. And it was obvious. It was obvious before the winter break. It wasn't going to happen, let's be honest.
And we're three games back from the winter break, and he's using tiredness as an excuse already.
Ridiculous. I mean, that was just desperation and just flailing for excuses. I don't blame him for that. But I don't think it'll be a too much of a hard job. I mean, look where we were last year, after losing to a junior team in the cup. And Robson came in and managed, not straight away, but after a couple of weeks, turned them around. We got in Pollock, we got in McDonald. You know, we got the foundation was there for him to keep it, make us hard to beat. So we were hard to beat. And now and we had Ramadani and McCrory, who I think we probably have missed both of them. So I think Robson's kind of been had his kneecaps done this season by having Ramadani. Pollock didn't come back. McDonald hasn't had the game time. Not sure he's the answer anyway. And McCrory. So we lost big personalities that were probably the cornerstone of that run that he went on that got him the job. So if we find someone to come in and give him a boot up the arse, then I think we could still probably quite easily get fourth because the rest of the league hasn't really pulled away.
Mm. And I guess galvanising the players is quite key. We look at Vinny Bazawan has been put out on loan to MN. Questions around his attitude. Same being applied to the likes of Duke in recent weeks. Shaden Morris I've seen online as well have question marks around his attitude. Phil, it could be that the change in manager benefits these guys, and then I know us as fans will then question mark that because you should be playing for the badge, not the manager. But how important is it that those players remember, as Johnny says, you know, given the standard we've seen in the league this season, fourth is still achievable. But obviously we've got a couple of really difficult fixtures coming up on Saturday and Tuesday. But kind of reacting and showing the fans that they still do care as much as we care for the team on the pitch.
Oh, they've got to. I mean, I think how many weeks now in a row have we had Hayes and Shinney, etc., coming out in their pressers and saying, you know, we need to do our actions on the pitch. We can talk all we want about how we're, you know, here to fight for the club and turn results around, blah, 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 but we've got to do it on the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to do it. They can't back out of that now. You know, it's... And I think as well, for a lot of your players, when, you know, you've mentioned Duke, Morris, etc., and also we're speaking about stepping stones earlier, I think, you know, they've got to remember, if they can turn a season around, a good move still in the cards for them. You know, the longer they sit on the bench, they don't play, the lower their stock drops and the less chance they've got of getting that move that, you know, really last season would have earned for a few of them.
And I guess, you know, Johnny, you mentioned about the signings of Matty Pollock, who came in after Jim Goodwin departed, and quite soon after Jim Goodwin departed. I think he certainly was a player that Jim identified. Angus McDonald came in after the departure. This sacking of Barry Robson's come less than 24 hours before the transfer window slams shut, to channel my inner Jim White. As Stephen Wiltshire says, are we now fucked for signing any more players? Obviously, there's been kind of the rumours on Matty Pollock, which we touched on in the last episode, Phil. I saw in the comments that he's starting for Watford tonight, and I saw yesterday that he's committed his kind of wanting to fight for his place in the Watford team for the rest of the season. Talk of Jason Kerr coming in on loan from Wigan, if that Matty Pollock deal became dead in the water. Of course, Jason Kerr, the captain of St Johnstone when they won the Cup double, suffered a serious injury with Wigan and only returned to first team action just the other week. So signing a kind of injury-prone defender doesn't kind of scream appealing to me just now. And up front, obviously there's been talk of Duke departing the club. Leganes from Spain have been touted as being interested, currently leading the second division over in Spain. And if he does depart, I just hope that the injury Esther Sokler picked up yesterday as he headed straight down the tunnel after coming off the pitch isn't serious as first feared, because boy, are we short up top if Duke was to depart and that injury was to be serious.
I think if Duke... Well, okay, there's a few points there. I think we've brought Killian Phillips in, and he looked like he was definitely up for it last night. I thought he was going to get... Did he get booked? I can't remember, but he was throwing himself around a fair bit. Mm-hmm. But that's not the kind of player we need at the moment. I think we need width and we need defenders. Because of the injury situation. So that defence last night was shaky at best. Every time Dundee came forward, they seemed to panic. Gave me no confidence that we were going to hold out for one. I thought we had to go and get two, and there we go, as it was proved. But I think I've heard a rumor that if Duke goes, then we're going to sign Armstrong from Killy. I don't know why we're waiting if that is the case. So I think we should just get it done. You know, just let's not wait for any outs. Let's just bring him in because fairly okay. There's a touch of the Matty Kennedys about it, but we need width in the team and we haven't got any. Shane Morris, I don't think. Sadly, no harm to the guy. He's near cutting it for me. Johnny
Foul
Hayes.
Throw summed it up last night, didn't it?
I was so bored by the second half. I was scrolling Airbnb looking for places to go on holiday. It was so bad. And I kind of missed that foul throw, but I was aware of it. But yeah, he's not going to cut it
from like here, is he?
Brilliant. But I think the, by that time, the boos from the stands were, I mean, that would have played on everybody's mind on the pitch. But yeah, we need width. Papi Habib Gay, I don't know if he's going to cut it either. We spent actual cash money on him. And Shane Morris, Jesus.
We spent nearly £1 million on those two players.
Holy fuck. That's incredible. But yeah, we need players definitely. So hopefully we're not fucked for getting players in this window. But we have a director of football and recruitment team for that anyway. So, you know.
And, well, I don't know if we did under Barry Robson, but certainly under McInnes, we always worked two windows ahead. So I would have liked to think that there was a strategy in place for this window. But, yeah, we've left it till the very last minute to do any transfer dealing. So I'm sure it'll be a busy day tomorrow. Everyone's had the notifications for the club on Twitter today, and I'm sure they'll be on tomorrow. So it'll be another productive day at work, just scrolling to see who's coming in, who's going, if anything is moving in there. Before we do move on, because we'll kind of reflect on the game last night briefly and look ahead to the game coming up at the weekend, I want to get both your thoughts on maybe some of the early runners and riders that have been kind of touted for the Aberdeen job. It's a fairly uninspiring list. Early doors puts Alex Neil as the bookies' favourite, I think at 2-1. Phil, I'll come to you first. If you watch the clip that the BBC Scotland put up on social media, the four fans that they interviewed were all Neil Lennon advocates. Please no. Any of the names so far for you just screaming, no, please, Dave, don't take that as a sample size for the Aberdeen support?
There's been a few. Like I say, Neil Lennon being in there, Paul Heckenbottom, Paul Lambert, not really keen on them. I like some of the sort of left field ones that I've seen. You know, I've seen Callum as a big, what's it, Jimmy Thielen. He was early advocating him. Know nothing about him, but I saw 4-3-3 attack and I thought, that seems all right. I've got a few of my other left field ones, like we're saying before, entirely unrealistic for the most part, but, you know, wouldn't mind Jesse Marsh. Just get real-life Ted Lasso in. He's Cormac. It'd be great. Even, you know, one that's probably not even that far-fetched, but would hate it, would be Ian Cathro. I did see somebody bandying his name around. I think his latest stint was in Saudi somewhere, was it? The LA had.
We don't need the laptop back in Scottish football.
No, not at all. Did see someone bandy his name. And one that I quite liked was Bo Svensson. Used to manage Mine in Germany. Seemed pretty good, averaging sort of just under 2 points a game. So over about 104 games, might not be a bad shout. He's been out of work for a year. So it'll be interesting. I mean, there'll be some names that pop out of absolutely nowhere over the next however many days, weeks, months it takes us to fill the role.
And, you know, for those of you that follow this podcast on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, you can, if you don't, you can check us out at RTG_podcast. Lee McDonald did a thread on about 10 foreign managers. So I gave that a retweet. He's gone for some potentially realistic, some not so realistic. And that Jimmy Thielen, who did just sign a new contract with Elfsborg until, I think it's December 2026, I saw, is mentioned in there. He does also mention Dick Schroeder, no relation to me, although I know a lot of you probably think I am a dick at times, but no relation. Johnny, kind of same to you, any names that stick out and you immediately think, please don't appoint them? I know you mentioned Frank Lampard's high in the odds, about 20, that's 25 to 1. I know it was a joke, but it was a name that's obviously been mentioned and probably will be there given the success that Steven Gerrard had when he was in at Rangers.
None of the usual suspects. I don't want, I would go so far as to say I don't want a manager who comes from the British Isles.
Okay.
Because I want someone who will not be brought up or be aware of the dominance of the Glasgow, to have that kind of inbuilt bias, the inferiority complex, whatever you want to call it, that says all we can do is be third, you know, best case scenario, because that hamstrings you right away, you know. So I want someone a bit left field. I think I had a look at Jimmy Thielen in a bit of detail, because I saw Callum, just to channel my Callum here, I saw a post, a piece on him in Sports Illustrated, I think it was, and he doesn't play 4-3-3 according to this, it's 4-2-3-1.
Okay.
But he's not a possession-based manager, so he won't just pass the ball, his team won't just pass the ball around just for the sake of it. So he's into high press and quick transition, I suppose you would say. So long passing, but progressive long passing, not hoofball, put it that way. But so I did a bit of research into him. He kind of did tick some of the boxes I'd be looking for. But apart from that, I don't have any names. I just want us to go a bit further afield and find someone from out with the UK.
So you're not for, as Roy Thompson suggests, Danny Armstrong's manager following him up north, and the return of Derek McInnes. Phil, no, would you be for a Derek McInnes reunion?
Be funny, but no, probably not.
I'd rather have Neil Warnock if we're going down the funny route. Paul Donaldson mentions another name that's on the list from Liam McDonald, Igor Biskan. Says looks an interesting name. He was the Rijeka manager when we played them in 2019, previously managed Dinamo Zagreb as well. If you're going down the managers from out with the British Isles, good to see that you're considering Jurgen Klopp and Jose Mourinho then, Johnny, for the job, given their recent departures or announced departures.
We should go and ask Liverpool for early release for Klopp, right?
Yeah, well, this is what we get for Reece Williams.
Danny Ward.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I see Sportsfan 0374 sent us a tweet as well saying that Darren Ferguson will be high on the list, of course. Again, the connection to his dad. And he's been linked before, doing a decent job with Peterborough again this season. Name that name kind of excite you at all, or just think just because it's the Ferguson name that carries weight?
It would excite Cormac, but I don't think it can only end one way, and it wouldn't be well.
And I'm just trying to find, there was a thread that Callum McFadden did also on Twitter. And he actually that's where the Gary Rowett name that I got was. He put that in there. Stephen Robinson, obviously, for the job he's done at St Mirren. For me, that's a no. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is also a name that I've seen mentioned, but for a few times, but nope. Not just because of the fact that you're on, Johnny, but Callum McFadden mentions Tiernan Lynch, who is the current Larn manager, a bit of a left field candidate. But Lynch has brought Larn their first domestic title last season, used to working in a full-time environment, and plays an open attacking brand of football. So yeah, again, that is more of a left field suggestion.
Very much so. But again, I think my left field suggestions, I like managers from leagues of a similar level. to ours, like the Nordic leagues, for example. And unless you believe the Ross County manager, I don't think we're quite at that level yet.
John Smith suggests Dave Chaloner, current Stockport County manager. One of my friends suggested that today, given what he's done in the lower leagues of England. I guess another name out with that, the British Isles, Dwight York, of course, touted himself for the job pre-Barry Robson. I'm sure he will be interested. Tavis Thompson mentioning Marco Bielsa if he fancies coming back. The name that I put forward on social media this afternoon was John Eustace. Probably goes against kind of the want for somebody experienced, but took Birmingham City to sixth place before their American owners decided that they thought hiring Wayne Rooney would be just what the club needs to try and secure Premiership football. Certainly an appointment that was well received in terms of his style at Birmingham City. And let's not forget as well that before he departed there, the Glasgow press were touting him to get the job at Rangers before, of course, Philippe Clement took over. So if he's good enough to be touted for that job, currently out of work just now, why not good enough for Aberdeen? Is there any names for either of you that you'd kind of initially think, I hope that they are on the short list of candidates?
Xavi, he's gone in the summer.
Serious candidates?
I honestly don't know where they're going to look. I've seen, is it Pascal Janssen got bandied around a bit as well? And Dutch, was it Eindhoven or Alkmaar, one of them?
Alkmaar, I think it was Alkmaar. Yeah.
You know, he'd be a good appointment. He'd probably be a bit out of our league in terms of where he would want to end up next. But like I say, I mean, in terms of managers out of work just now, the pool's pretty thin. And then managers that are in jobs, you're sort of thinking, would they come to us in our current predicament? Maybe not. So it's hard to tell. There's no one I would glaringly say is like my definitive want.
Johnny, I'll ping this one to you because of kind of your comment about looking out with the British Isles. Roy Thompson asks, is a foreign manager a good idea after three car crashes?
Three car crashes who were all British / Irish. So Glass, Goodwin and Robson. None of the car crashes were foreign. So I don't see. I just did a Barry Robson thing there. I don't think. Well, what can possibly? I mean, three in a row.
I guess maybe if the point where Roy's coming from, it would be the sense in the pressure that is on Dave Cormack to get this right, and if the next appointment doesn't. But whether it's foreign or not, if it goes wrong, everyone's going to be looking at Dave Cormack.
They're looking at him now. I mean, we're seeing the exact same. He's not going away. I mean, it's his club essentially, right? He pays the piper. He calls the tune. And yes, we failed again with another manager, and Robson. Probably everybody thought he couldn't be denied the job at the time. Fair enough, and it didn't work out. So, you know, that's a thing on the screen just there now that I'm thinking. Maybe he's playing Football Manager himself and he thinks he can have a go.
Yeah, but Paul Hannon suggesting that Dave Cormack might take charge himself. Well, I
honestly don't see any harm in a foreign manager coming in because we've not hit the mark in the last three and they've not been, okay, Jim's from Waterford, but I mean, he was used to the Scottish game. I think if we're doing it in a league, if we're sourcing a manager from a league of a similar standard, I suppose you could say, like the Allsvenskan or any of the Nordic leagues or even the Dutch league, then I don't see the harm because, you know, especially the Nordic leagues, I think they play a similar style to us or, you know, they have a similar philosophy in the game and the weather is quite similar as well.
Yeah.
You know, in many ways, there's no massive risk in that. I just want someone with a track record as well. So someone who's actually done something and at a decent level.
Well, I guess time will tell and that will give us enough content to generate, because obviously things haven't been kind of great on the pitch. But I know, Johnny, you said you didn't kind of read too much into the statement from the club. Phil, one thing that struck me from the statement was they said, as a result of defeat against Dundee, not beating Dundee last night, the club have made the decision. Maybe thank God Esther Sokler was offside, or Graham Shinney decided he needed about five touches to get a shot away on goal, because the way I read that line was that had we beaten Dundee, that would have been another plaster and another few more weeks of this pain being dragged out. On the pitch last night, it wasn't pretty, was it?
No, it was not great. I mean, started off, you know, the opening sort of 15 minutes, it was a bit scrappy, but I thought we sort of had the run of the game for the most part. But it was the same as what we spoke about last week. It hits the second half and it was like 11 amateurs came out onto the park. It was, was not pleasant viewing at all.
Yeah, and even the changes, obviously in defence, didn't work with three changes to the side. But, you know, Johnny, we go in 1-0 up at half time. Agent Shaughnessy doing his best to help us out with the penalty. No kind of question marks for me around that. I think it's a spot on decision. But as I go back, probably kind of summing up where we were just now, was that Graham Shinney opportunity at 0-0 where he should do better. But, you know, for us, maybe I don't really kind of agree with Barry Robson in saying how much we dominated that first half. We kind of rode our luck with some of the opportunities Dundee had as well. The other incident I kind of wanted to ask your opinion about as well was the Leighton Clarkson challenge at the end of the first half. No booking from Nick Walsh, a check from VAR. Were you surprised that he wasn't summoned to the screen?
Yes, because we've seen it before. We've seen challenges that were less egregious than that one. He did seem to be reckless. He did seem to kick his leg out. And what was it, the Kilmarnock player on Saturday got sent off for the tackle on the Hibs player? Ridiculous. That was a ridiculous sending off. I honestly don't know what the criteria is for a review for those things, because his foot was high. He caught him, didn't he? He did catch it.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Above the knee, I think.
Was it above the knee? Because I thought it was maybe on the shin guard, but...
Was it certainly high.
Yeah, well, there's a few of us kind of not kind of sure. I kind of thought shin, someone else thought knee, but I definitely think it was a clumsy-looking challenge.
It's clumsy.
Lazy, to be honest, much like most of his performance last night.
I think maybe what saved him was that there was no real force in it. You know, it wasn't like, you know, he wasn't out of control. He was on the ground and it was more of a lazy wave of the leg than a malicious one.
Yeah.
But you know, nothing would surprise me with VAR.
No. Phil, the biggest thing for me from last night's game, obviously, despite the fact that we went 1-0 up, was how Dundee didn't let their heads drop, and also the proactiveness of the two dugouts. Tony Doherty reacting to what he described as a frustrating first half where he didn't think that either side kind of performed to their full potential. And he identified areas where Dundee could change it, made the change bringing on Josh Mulligan at halftime. And, well, I mean, we've not exactly been a joy to watch, but boy, the way Dundee passed that ball about and passed us off the park at times in the second half was, well, it was fun to watch in terms of if you like watching that style of football, but not from an Aberdeen point of view.
No, and it was, again, it was what we spoke about most weeks that Barry fails to do. Tony Docker, he saw Dundee were getting overrun in the midfield.
Yeah.
So he put an extra body in there. He saw we could be exploited wide. So he stretched the game wide by playing a lot of long balls into the channel. But like you're saying, it was like night and day from first half to second half for Dundee. And we were really lucky to come out with something in the end. You know, if I was a Dundee fan, I'd be saying, well, the better teams lost, you know, suffered there. It just beggars belief sometimes. I mean, I'm hoping whoever we bring in next has at least some sort of nous to know when things aren't working, you know, because I think that was the turning point in the game. Is one manager saw something was working, wasn't working, and made the change, and the other just sat in his hands. And it's, yeah.
I think for the last sort of 20 minutes of that game, our shape and structure, such as it was, just went completely to shit.
It was almost non-existent.
It was like watching, honestly, our shape looked like a bunch of lads playing a kickabout in the park. Well, and that chance at the end when Beck got the ball on the left, you just saw, I think we lost the ball in midfield. We were trying to break, last minute, trying to break up the field. I think, was it Clarkson who lost the ball? I can't remember who lost the ball anyway. And they're attacking us, and all you see is a line of our players in a straight line in the middle of the park, and Beck on his own on the left. I'm thinking, what the fuck is this? This is an absolute fucking shambles.
Yeah, I know it wasn't Clarkson, because I know he was off at that point, but given who it was that the chance fell to, and all the kind of commotion from the Dundee fans of him rejoining, you just fully expected that to find the side netting, and obviously given kind of the situation we were in. So I was more surprised it didn't. Phil, did you come up for the game no. yesterday? No, you didn't. No. I was just wondering if, I don't know if it was kind of evident on the TV then for both of you that will have watched, because for me at the game, it felt like the pitch was extremely sanded. There was a lot of times when you saw them kicking the ball, there was that puff of sand kind of coming up, and it looked certainly up tawdry. I don't know if it kind of comes across on TV. The ball was taking an odd bounce or an odd kind of spin. Did that come across on TV at all?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it's a weird one, because normally I find our pitch is probably one of the best at holding up over the season. I normally think we have the best looking surface come final day of the season. Yeah. So I don't know if it has just been the sort of knock-on effect of the extra games in Europe, plus obviously the bad weather that we've had.
We've hardly been playing at home, though, so it's not like the pitch has been getting used.
Yeah. No, exactly. You could see it at points. And I don't know, again, if that maybe did affect our sort of play to try and be intricate around the box as much as the likes of McGrath tried to. But, I mean, really, there wasn't really much else going on.
I wonder if that we can use that as an excuse for Kel Roos's poor distribution. Kaiser saying, fit about Kel Roos, murder, murder, murder. I mean, Ross Doohan must be sitting on the bench thinking, what do I need to do to get a game? Do you think Kel's mind's elsewhere? A lot of talk about him leaving in the summer, Johnny, because, yeah, between his distribution and kind of sometimes his urgency, he seemed very hurried. I mean, he was a player that, of course, said that the players were going to show on the pitch that they could catch Hearts, given the gap. Since he came out and said that, the gap's got wider. And he chucked he was responsible for us dropping points at St Johnstone as well. So certainly a player that's coming under a lot more focus in recent weeks.
He's welcome to leave in the summer, as far as I'm concerned. Not good enough. Hasn't been for a long time. Don't think he was all at fault for the goal last night, but he doesn't command his area. He's not the kind of goalkeeper I think is up to the standard of us, of our club. What was his nickname? Was it the previous club? Was it Derby? Was it Dracula?
Yeah, Skokesker there. Yeah. Derby fans called him Dracula because of his fear of crosses.
Fear of crosses. Well, that sums him up. And he's supposed to be a ball playing goalie, right? Who can distribute the ball. Haven't seen precious little of that. So, yeah. He's welcome to go if he thinks he can do better than us.
In terms of the goal that we conceded last night, for me, the biggest frustration was, it comes from a second successive corner. The first corner, we learn absolutely nothing from. Dundee play it short and then work out to Owen Beck, who delivers a deep cross into the box. And the header, I think actually from Lee Ashcroft, it is tipped over via the bar from Kel Roos. And then the very next corner, played deep into the back post. Same man again, Lee Ashcroft, this time heads it into the ground and finds the back of the net. Now, Phil, personally, for me, I think Kel Roos has got to do a lot better in terms of commanding that area, just get everybody out the way. I don't know how he ends up outside of the frame of the goal. I saw you and Stuart questioning Angus McDonald's role. I think actually it's very clever play from Lee Ashcroft, because if you watch it back a couple of times, Lee Ashcroft kind of pins McDonald's arm. So in terms, kind of turns Angus and gets a bit of a run on him. But for me, I'm looking at my keeper and the fact that there's probably two or three other Aberdeen defenders in there at the same time. And I think if you watch a couple of Dundee's goals this season, the game that kind of strikes back is their last-minute equaliser at Kilmarnock as well. They very much enjoy flooding the box and kind of putting the pressure on the keeper. So, Phil, for me, the annoyance was we just didn't learn from that previous corner, and it's a really soft goal once again.
Oh, no, definitely. I mean, I would say probably more the blame goes on Roos. Obviously, the centre-halves have to do better in terms of, you know, actually going for the ball. But, like, say, Roos, he knows keepers are protected in that scenario. If he comes out and clatters somebody, nothing's going to happen to him. If he hits the deck, he's most likely going to get a free kick. I just think it's calamitous that we've allowed somebody to head the ball into the ground from, what, 4 yards out, maybe? How are you able to rise above everybody, including a 6'5" keeper, to head the ball into the ground from that far out?
Yeah, and it's not like we're a small team defensively either.
I mean, Angus McDonald's maybe, what, 6'2", 6'3"? He's quite tall. You know, it's... And obviously, Roos is, what, like 6'5", plus his arms. I mean, God, I don't under... And it's like you say, it's the same as a few goals we've conceded. We've just never learned. It's things happen and we just sort of go, okay, cool, like, that's fine.
And it goes back to that mentality point as well, Johnny, kind of the soft centre of this Aberdeen side, that once we concede, that the heads go down, the kind of faith gets sucked out. You look at the game at Tynecastle, where as soon as we go 1-0 down, I think you said we might as well blow the final whistle because we're not getting back into the game. And it was frustrating that once again that kind of didn't spur Aberdeen on as such. Dundee looked the more likely of the two sides as soon as that went to 1-1. Do you think that's fair?
Definitely. I think we panicked. I think the team were probably affected by the atmosphere. You could hear on the TV anyway that the booing whenever a straight pass was played, which was quite often, was evident. The subs that came on didn't really have a positive impact in the game. Dundee had control of the game. I think Robson's bizarre comments about we were in control of the game, that's not the game I watched. Dundee were the ones who were in control of that game, especially second half.
Yeah.
And we just seemed to go to pieces after they got their goal and panicked and thought, you know, we've got to somehow try and get a goal. And we did a lot of running around, but I don't think we created a real clear-cut chance after Dundee drew level. I can't remember one anyway.
I think we were kind of flirting with a goal. I don't really remember Trevor Carson having a serious save to make after it going 1-1. Of course, with the injury to Esther Sokler, we brought on Pat Habib Gay. John Smith says, can we talk about Gay? Well, that'll be the last thing we speak about from the game, because as I mentioned, if it is a serious injury to Esther, obviously with the games kind of coming thick and fast and the kind of uncertainty around Duke between now and the transfer window closing. Phil, I'll come to you whilst I try and gather some sensible thoughts on what you made of Pap's performance last night and what it could mean for him as the backup.
Where do I start with the Papster?
Pap him out of squad, maybe?
See, I'll give his due, right? Some of his movement is pretty good. I think people just know he doesn't know what to do when the ball's at his feet, that they don't actually give him the ball when he makes a good move. And I think that's the issue with him. I think whenever he has the ball at his feet, he just looks lost and he just doesn't have the right decisions in him. I mean, we saw it towards the end of the game there. I know he's the biggest guy and he should be in the box. Why is he whipping out stepovers? Why is he trying to beat his man 4 times? Why isn't he just going into the box, launched in, or even playing it down the line? I think McGrath maybe made an overlapping run. You're thinking even just send him down the line to do something. And then does the stepovers, gets fouled. Does what I can only describe as a sweet chin music. And I don't quite know what was going on. And also, his shorts look too short for him. That's another gripe, okay? Tip man, get him longer shorts because that annoys me whenever he comes on.
The thing about the stepovers that really annoyed me was the fact that it was getting Olays from the crowd. And I don't, obviously, I think ironically, but it just sums up where we are, that is what is generating an Ole just now.
The thing, as well, it's the slowest step over I've ever seen. I could only describe it as the Phil Neville step over, because, and it was the same as his entire game. Whenever he got the ball, everything just seemed so lackadaisical. And I get sometimes there's players that can do that, Berbatov, Neymar, you know, they can make everything look so nonchalant. They're elite level players. They can get away with that. I think when you're nonchalantly trying to do little flicks and tricks and it's not coming off, you just look like a right tit.
Yeah. Jordy Dragon says he scored more goals in Belgium than Shankland did, so give him time. I don't know how long we're going to give him. But I think the other thing as well that kind of stuck out from the game yesterday, you kind of mentioned about maybe his awareness, Phil, was when Bojan was bursting into the box and Pap was just chasing Bojan on the ball instead of running to the back post to kind of drag defenders the other way. Yeah, it's just kind of not working for him just now.
I think I put on Twitter about him, as he lied about being George Weah's cousin, similar to the guy that was at PSG. He got a trial or sort of somewhere similar, by claiming that.
Ali Dia, was it? Or what was his name? Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Well, this weekend sees the Saturday lunchtime kickoff against Celtic at Pittodrie. I saw someone say Sky Sports have the opportunity to do the funniest thing and make Barry Robson a guest in the studio, given, of course, his feelings for both sides. Certainly interesting if that was to happen. Johnny, I know you hate this term, but given where we are and no current manager, you know what's coming, I can tell by your reaction. Is this game a free hit?
I don't know about free hit, but I'm not sure. Not one of the three of us, and probably 5% of our fan base thinks we're going to get anything out of the game. Mm-hmm. I'm just apathetic. I'm actually glad I'm not going to be able to watch it, because we're going elsewhere on Saturday. So, and it's a lunchtime kickoff, so that's even better. I'm actually glad, because I'm sick to death of us being battered by a Celtic team who struggles to beat Ross County mm-hmm. 1 week, and then will turn into be world beaters against us the next. I've had Celtic fans in my mentions saying, we're shite, you'll be all right, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, but they always raise their game against us. It's a, you know, it's a trope that we get accused of, raising a game against Rangers, but they definitely seem to raise their game against us, and we make it so easy for them.
Raise their game against us, and their record at Pittodrie is absolutely phenomenal as well. It's, I mean, frustrating from an Aberdeen point of view, but probably not the game you want for kind of a new manager coming into. But again, I know obviously you were listening to Sports Sound, but you know, the pundits were saying that this is the sort of game, Johnny, that we'll probably actually get a better performance in, because, you know, you mentioned Celtic raised their game, but these are the games that the players probably put more effort in. You look at how we performed in Europe compared to how we've performed against, with the utmost respect to some of the teams we should be beating in this league, the likes of Dundee, Motherwell, St Mirren, St Johnstone's. We've not performed in those games this season.
No, but I think that's because they've tended to sit in and frustrate us. And that's one thing I would say about Dundee last night. They came to play. They came to win the game. And, you know, that gave us half a chance, as it turns out. You know, we had some chances. And I think the beginning of the second half is when we had a couple of chances and that goal chopped off for offside.
Yeah.
And I thought that's because Dundee thought they could come and get the 3 points and probably should have. So I think, yes, to some extent, there may be a raising of our game because it's Celtic at home. I don't know what the crowd's going to be. It's a lunchtime kickoff. There's a lot of apathy. If Warnock gets appointed in the next couple of days, it'll probably settle out. It'll be a banter. And who knows and what
a 1-0 win for the Reds if Warnock's in the dugout.
That would be hilarious.
Habib Gaye winner.
Exactly.
Habib Gaye winner, yeah.
Warnock won ball up to him coming home.
Phil, in terms of, you know, we could speak about Celtic and what they bring to this game, but I think for the sake of this episode and kind of the time we've taken up, we should just kind of sum it up in terms of an Aberdeen point of view. We're obviously looking for a reaction from the players, given everything that's gone on in recent weeks. I'm not here to kind of believe that the players are tired. If you're tired going into a game like this, the adrenaline should hopefully see you through. Do you expect, if Peter Leaven is the man that takes the team on Saturday, a change to our shape and personnel going into this game?
I would like to think so. I don't know what way he goes. I don't know if he goes with what he's more comfortable with. Obviously, majority of the, or well, all of the youth systems play a 3-4-3, as far as I'm aware. Whether he goes with that, because that's how he knows how it's set up, or whether he does actually go with the four at the back, like, you know, we tend to look like we perform better in. I've got no idea, but I would like to think there's a change. And really, all we really want, obviously, this isn't going to define how we're going to play under whoever takes over on a permanent basis. It's not going to define our season, really. I think all we want is the players to go out and actually look like they're interested and look like they care and just not totally chuck it after the first 10 minutes.
You know, if we can chuck it after we go 1-0 down.
Well, exactly. Well, exactly. If we can get to 90 minutes where it looks like everybody's, you know, ran their socks off, they've thrown themselves into challenges, we've tried to get on the front foot when we can, I think most people will be quite all right with that.
Yeah, and I think I've always said that as well. If we die trying, I would be much prouder of that instead of dying doing nothing, a la Jim Goodwin at home to Celtic in that infamous game as well. So I'm definitely wanting to see us, you know, take the game to Celtic where possible. This is an opportunity for players that are maybe frustrated at the limited game time that they've had under Barry Robson to maybe step up and show what they can do. But it's also a chance for all players concerned to step up and show any potential new manager what they can bring to this Aberdeen side. So I would like to think that the effort and application is there, whether that's a Neil Warnock for 6 months or someone on a more permanent basis remains to be seen. But Johnny, surely that's got to be something that we're hoping for, is that they're, you know, not putting themselves in the transfer window as such, because that will obviously be closed, but they're putting themselves in the market to impress a new manager.
You would hope so. I don't think, I mean, this time last year, I think we were pointing the finger at the players as much as anybody else and saying they'd seem to have chucked it at. I'm not sure that's the case this year. I think they just haven't got the structure, they haven't got the formation right. They're not being used to their best effect. So
yeah, I agree.
Let's say if Peter Leaven comes in and actually plays, you know, four at the back, and I don't know what he's going to do in the midfield because we haven't got any wide players. So I think playing five across the midfield with five centre midfielders, that doesn't work either.
Well, I wonder, because Killian Phillips has kind of been touted as a possible winger. Ryan Duncan, we saw him, Shaden Morris. Yeah. So
I'd be throwing Killian Phillips in straight away. I saw enough from him last night to think maybe he'll get stuck in.
Mm-hmm.
I just think I don't think it could be any worse than it would have been under Robson, put it that way. So I think we'll see a little uptick in the performance, just as long as Boyan doesn't get injured in training between now and then.
Yeah, no, I agree on that. It's definitely going to be something to talk about, and probably from a different angle that maybe we expected. Had the decision that took place today as Barry Robson was sacked as Aberdeen manager not taken place. Of course, the game live on Sky Sports, 12:30 kickoff. My thanks goes to both Johnny and Phil for joining me on this live episode of Red Tinted Glasses here on the YouTube channel. There's been nearly 200 of you watching almost throughout the last hour and a bit. So we really do appreciate the support and loads of interactions on the show tonight. So if you have been watching, remember to hit that like button, subscribe if you're new to the channel as well. I'll just catch up on some final comments as well. Paul Hannon saying, no matter who gets the job, us dandies will give them all the support as always. Although, you know, fine, well, whoever gets the job, someone's going to be unhappy at who gets it. I'm surprised it took so long for someone to suggest this. Alan S. suggesting we get the BK Hakan manager in.
Has he gone already? I thought he'd gone. He's left already, hasn't he?
Well, possibly, but the one, I'm guessing the one that beat us is who he's looking for. And the things I can't find, he predicted months ago how much of a dud Barry Robson is. He says he's had no apology. So, well, we should have listened to you sooner, is all I'll say on that. But Phil, Johnny, thank you very much for your time tonight and venting your feelings, as I said, as Barry departs the Dons and the show moves on and the search begins for Aberdeen's next manager. We'll be back on Monday, rounding up the action from the weekend and any kind of movement in terms of the managerial job may move us into a more reactive episode. So if you haven't subscribed or are subscribed and don't have notifications on, put them on, even if you're listening on catch up on audio, to be aware of the next episode. So thank you both. Thank you, everybody else. Until next time, thanks for tuning in.
Sports Social Podcast Network.